Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how's it going?
I'm great. I have defeated all of my rivals and hidden the bodies, so I don't have the same problems Lisa has.
I mean, no, you're right. You don't have the same problems Lisa has. I would say different.
Thank goodness for that.
They're different. Different problems.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely. I'm good as well. We are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon, patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. Donate $2 a month and you get access to all our bonus content, monthly bonus episodes, weekly new reviews, at least when there's new episodes. We just got a big week this week, a bunch of new supporters. Brings us over our last goal, I guess, at this point, which will have us both drawing terrible drawings for each episode. Just what we, I guess, our it could be our favorite scene.
Oh my gosh, guys, you have no idea.
Favorite scene, favorite character, or, you know, a representation of a quote. Who knows? It could be anything, and they'll be bad. But you can laugh at us. I think that, you know, that's what it is. We had such a good week that we are within only $6 away from releasing a commentary track pack, which will include our top 10 episodes from our best episode ever list. We will watch
that's
them.
That's right, guys. If you want to see us argue like crazy over the best 10 episodes, there you go.
No, it's the top 10, Matt. It's not the best. We'll just go 1 through 10 and we'll do commentary at this
enough.
Moment. And then we'll work backwards from there, you know, whenever we get to the next one. Like I said, tons of people. We have a John. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Thomas. Two guys just give the first name. Thank you, Thomas.
Thomas, you rock.
We have an XNeo13. Thank you, XNeo13.
As long as you've never been in a Matrix movie, thank you.
Hey,
Matrix. Sorry, as long as you haven't been in the Matrix sequels.
That was not the Wachowskis' fault. Okay, that was studio pressure. They wanted to make one movie. They were forced to make two. Ryan Kuhn, thank you very much, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
We have Matt Bauer. Thank you, Matt.
Matt, you are as cool as this Matt, so that makes you pretty awesome.
Oh, wow. And then we have Andy Hoffman. Thank you, Andy.
Andy, I hope you're not related to the Kaufmans.
Hoffman?
Kaufman, same diff. Come on.
Oh, is that name now? Names sound the same that people are related. Is that so? I'm related to Greg Norman. Is that how that works? Okay.
I mean, that's not how that works.
That's not how names work, man. You need to do some research
into
that.
The
podcast.
My parents.
If you want to help out the show in another way, please go to iTunes or wherever you listen to us and give us a good review, 5 stars, subscribe, you know, all that stuff. It helps us out. It gets us higher in the rankings, helps people find us, see us, and obviously word of mouth is also very much appreciated. On to this week's episode. It is Lisa's Rival, episode 1F17, originally aired September 11th, 1994. Obviously, before that date meant anything, this is the...
Hey, that date has meant something since my mother was born, all right?
Oh, okay.
It's her birthday,
okay.
So, you know.
Okay, happy birthday. This is the last episode of the season 5 production run. It was, along with Bart of Darkness, the other, quote-unquote, victim of the Northridge earthquake, where they had to delay production of it, and the place where it was being produced had to be demolished, and they had to do actually some of the animating in their different homes before, you know, that's different.
Those poor people, my goodness.
It's different. That's different than the actual production of this show. Like that's where it's before it's sent off to.
Right. It's yes. Like the storyboarding kind of animation.
Yeah.
Or
exactly.
Keyframing.
Yes, precisely. Let's see. Written by Mike Scully. This is his first episode. He's been given writing credit, although the core idea is one of Conan O'Brien's that kind of matriculated down and grew and grew and grew, and then Mike Scully ended up writing the episode. He ended up being a showrunner as well. Directed by Mark Kirkland, who has directed tons of episodes and still is working on a couple episodes a season. And its original American broadcast, it finished tied for 23rd with Dateline NBC. You find that so strange. It's just tied with Dateline.
Back when people actually watch news shows.
People still do, just not nearly as many.
Yeah, young people don't watch
young people.
TV in general.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Nielsen rating of 9.9, second highest rating on Shaw Fox that week. I don't know what beat it.
Thank goodness.
But it was second something. The chalkboard gag. That felt strange saying that. No one is interested in my underpants.
It's like, well, that is definitely true for at least another 8 years, probably.
No, I guess that, yeah. Okay. I don't want to. I don't delve too deep into that. The couch gag, the Simpsons swim to the couch.
Yeah. Simple. Easy.
Yeah, it's fine. Episode guest stars Winona Ryder as Allison Taylor, which I don't know if I remembered that it was Winona Ryder or not.
I definitely did not.
Yeah. Winona Ryder doesn't have, like, I don't know. I couldn't place her from her voice in that. You know, I couldn't go, oh, yeah, of course it's Winona Ryder.
Right, yeah. Her voice is not notable enough besides, you know, she has a pretty voice. That's about all I could get from
her. Yeah, yeah. It's like, hey, it sounds like a little girl. The episode begins with Lisa trying to find a place to play her saxophone. She's in her room, and Bart doesn't want her there because he's trying to make prank phone calls. She can't do it in the garage because Homer is, quote-unquote, fixing March's camera.
That's right. That's how you use a drill. You hit it with a hammer.
and destroy
it, that's why it's called a hammer drill, obviously.
Obviously, yeah, of course. And he needs he just hits it once and the camera collapses. And Marge apparently had sacrificed that camera so that she could have some alone time with her romance novel. It's like a pirate romance novel with a Fabio lookalike.
With an earring, of course.
He has an earring, which...
That totally means he's a pirate. Yep.
Yeah, that's... I like the subtlety there. Marge is kind of like in La La Land fantasizing. And Lisa is, again, she's trying to play her saxophone, practicing to be first chair in the school band. She has to go outside, and we get a bit about Flanders thinking that it's the Archangel Gabriel and it's the apocalypse, which Rod and Todd are very excited about.
Well, of course. I mean, they've been waiting for that their entire lives.
How old are Rod and Todd?
I think they're the same age as... Well, I think... What was it?
We don't seem in class.
Todd is the same age as Bart, and I think Rod is a little older.
Okay.
So I would assume, you know, 10 and maybe 11 or 12.
Okay. Regardless, we... I don't know. We cut to Lisa in class. They are taking a test. And we get a bit... Ralph Wiggum is delightful in this episode. I pretty much pulled all the Ralph Wiggum clips. And
well, yeah, I mean, if you want the best clips in any episode, you go with the Ralph Wiggums. I mean, come on.
Of course. And in this clip, we hear some Ralph and we meet Allison.
45 seconds till pencil's down.
Lisa, what's the answer to number 7? Sorry, Ralph, that would defeat the purpose of testing as a means of student evaluation. My cat's name is Mittens.
3, 2, 1, and that's pencil's down. Now, here's an oral extra credit question. What was Christopher Columbus actually looking for when he discovered America?
Ooh, ooh!
Anyone besides Lisa for a change? Ralph, this better not be about your cat. Oh, all right.
Columbus was looking for a passage to India.
Oh, correct, Allison. And on your very first day in our class.
And during a subsequent voyage, Columbus found what is now the continent of South America.
Yowee.
I never made Miss Hoover yowee.
Well, that's because you were a know-it-all from day one, Lisa. Come on.
Yeah, you're an expected knowledgeable person. Lisa goes in the schoolyard. She meets Allison. Allison is eating her lunch. A sandwich appears. And we learn Lisa goes up to her and thinks, oh, a peer. You know, someone that is her age, that is as smart as she is, someone that she can be friends with, kind of commiserate with. At least that's what she expects. But then... we learn that first Allison is not the same age. She is actually younger than Lisa. She's 7. She skipped ahead a grade. She should actually be in first grade, but because of her intelligence, she skipped ahead. We find out that she also plays a saxophone and is also going for the first chair in the band, like Lisa is. And Lisa's kind of intimidated at this point.
Well, yeah, because Lisa will make this point later in the episode, but essentially she's better than Lisa at all the things that make her special. And it's one thing to find an intellectual peer and someone who likes things you like, but when they like everything you like, then you have stuff to talk about, but you got to have some competing interests just so that you two people are introducing new things to each other. If you all like the same exact things, then your friendship's going to be pretty boring.
Lisa's not used to, like, it's a completely new thing to her. Someone her age, that or younger, that is smarter than her, theoretically. Or at least could be smarter than her. And that is, this is the A-plot. It is kind of the main story. You know, it's the title of the episode. But we then cut to what becomes the B-story, which, like, I could not be told, like, completely opposite kind of plots. Like, an A and B-plot. Like, this is, the B-plot, Homer is a... eating pizza while Bart steers his car, which, I mean, I mean, those are...
I swear I've never done that with Bart in the place of my wife.
Never. Of course not. No. Hey, I want to eat some pizza. Why don't you drive the car for me while I'm sitting in the driver's seat? And while Bart is actually doing an admirable job of not getting them into a car crash, they run across a crashed sugar truck, which...
It looks like a tanker truck. I don't know if they actually ship sugar in tanker trucks. I don't believe they do, but yeah, maybe.
So I think sugar, I would imagine that I guess it would have to be because.
I'm pretty sure they package sugar in the same places they process it. So it's like, you know, sugar cane comes in one end and goes out packaged sugar. It may be generic or it might be in big bags that they then parcel out into smaller bags.
Yeah.
But
who knows? Regardless, the person who crashed this truck is Hans Moleman, who is, we can add this to his, one of his many small jobs that he ruins. He crashed the tanker truck that as sugar is all over the highway. Homer theoretically helps him out by giving him some money to call a police or call help. But we should know better.
Homer, that was downright decent of you.
We hit the jackpot here. White gold, Texas tea, sweetener.
Dad, isn't this stealing?
Read your town charter, boy. If foodstuff should touch the ground, said foodstuff shall be turned over to the village idiot. Since I don't see him around, start shoveling.
So Homer fills their car like up to the full, fills the trunk and the actual cab, or if I call it that, full of sugar.
The general seating area.
Yeah, it's just to the brim almost, and Bart is having trouble breathing. At the same time, Lisa is having a conversation with Marge, basically asks her why she never got skipped ahead in class, which Allison had mentioned that she probably should have because she's so smart, and honestly, Lisa probably should. I mean, I believe that is an episode, right, where
Bart skipped ahead and Bart is skipped back.
Pulled back to third grade, right. And, you know, she even intimates that Marge should be, like, quote-unquote nicer to Principal Skinner, which Marge takes umbrage with, says that she is nice. And Homer, with all of his recent sugar, makes some dinner.
Homer, I really appreciate you making dinner, but this food tastes a little strange.
It hurts my teeth.
That's because I've loaded it with sugar! Marge, our ship has come in. I found 500 pounds of sugar in the forest that I'm going to sell directly to the consumer. And all for a low, low price of $1 per pound.
But the grocery store sells sugar for 35 cents a pound.
And it doesn't have nails and broken glass in it.
Those are prizes. Ooh, a blasting cap.
The sugar and a blasting cap.
I was about to say, there are several things wrong with this. First of all, a blasting cap in the sugar? Yeah, what else was that truck carrying?
I imagine that was on the highway, and then he accidentally shoveled it in.
Yeah, but what kind of highway has blasting caps on it? There should be no blasting caps anywhere.
One in Springfield has blasting caps on it?
I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
And also, I was going to ask, I don't do much of the baking around here, but is sugar even now $1 a pound? I know prices have gone up quite a bit since the early 90s, but I don't think sugar is $1 a pound yet.
Cost of sugar. We have this great resource in front of us. Let's see. 5-pound bag is $7.50 on coffeeforless.com.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust that.
Let's go to Walmart. We got great value, pure sugar, 5 pounds, not available. They don't want you to buy your sugar online from Walmart, apparently. There's 10 pounds. How much is 10 pounds? Not available. Great. This is great.
Oh, U.S. retail is 64.20 cents per pound.
All right. So there you go. So
we have yet to reach that particular price for sugar.
Yeah, it's 20 years later, Homer's still overinflated the value.
He's still gouging.
Yes. We cut to the auditions for first chair for saxophone. It's the school-wide auditions for every instrument. So we get to see, Uter play a, what is that?
It's an alpenhorn.
Okay, there he's playing. He does a decent job too.
He does. Those are surprisingly hard to play. You gotta have some serious lungs on you to play those things.
He's a stout little kid. Jimbo is on tambourine, does a spectacular job.
Oh yeah, just give it a real smack.
He hits that tambourine, and in the process, destroys Martin's lute, who he was gonna play. But then we get to the saxophone auditions, and Lisa and Allison are both up from the same spot, and Lisa plays very competently, and then Allison plays, and then now, and also I almost pulled this, but at a certain point it just becomes a cacophony. They are challenging each other. They have a little showdown until Lisa runs out of breath, falls off the stage, and is knocked unconscious, I suppose. I'm not sure if that's from the fall or from her lack of oxygen.
I think lack of oxygen.
Okay. Although the fall probably didn't help, but she has we have a fake out where she wakes up, learns she is not getting the first chair, and screams, only to her to wake up again, thinking the first time was only a hallucination or a dream, unless she's sleeping. And she again learns that she did not get the first chair and screams again. And this is not a dream.
Mr. Lager is quick to assure her that. I have a question. You were in orchestra. I was in band. Did you ever have to try out for orchestra, or did they just, you showed up and they put you where they wanted you?
I was in band for 1 year.
Oh, okay.
I played.
What did you play?
Percussion.
Oh, okay.
I played bass. It was only I played cello during concert season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
I was just wondering, because we always just auditioned and then they put us where the heck they wanted. There was no auditioning for first chair. It was just,
you get a general, like, hey, the guy gets a general sense of, like, I was in orchestra, like, I just played, I had been in there for, I was one of the original members of the orchestra, like, when we had, like, eight people.
The founding member?
Yeah, and by the time I was in high school, like, we had 30 or 40 people in the advanced orchestra.
Wow.
So I don't, the guy, our conductor and teacher knew us, kind of knew our skill levels. So he just kind of like, you're there, you're there, you're there, you're there. I don't think there was ever kind of a, frankly, I was second chair, and that's a perfect spot. It's like being a bass player in a band. Like, you're there, you're hanging out, you're in the front, but nothing's relying on you. You're just a part, you're a cog in the machine. You get to be at the party, but you don't have to be responsible a lot. I was perfect. That was, I did not want to be first chair. That's a lot of responsibility, and frankly I did not want to practice at all. I did occasionally. That's, and when she screams, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, Lisa is obviously perturbed at this. Like we said earlier, she's is threatened by Allison, apparently, because there's only room for one good saxophone player and one smart kid in the school, or at least in Lisa's mind there is. Luckily, she has Marge to reassure her.
But she's better than me at everything that makes me special.
Believe me, honey, she's more scared of you than you are of her.
You're thinking of bears, Mom.
I'm not usually one for non-sequitur humor, but that is perfect.
You're thinking
just Marge trying to be comforting but failing.
Yeah, well, she's, I mean, and that's kind of the best. All the humor, rewatching this episode, like, it was funnier than I remember, and I think I really like it more probably than I used to, is because I think I harp on this a lot, but all the humor is very character based. It doesn't feel like they're, like, all the characters, when they say a joke, it feels like them saying the joke. It doesn't necessarily feel like, hey, we have a joke, let's just give it to somebody. And that is a very Marge joke. It's a very much
it
like...
It really is.
I'm doing my best to help, like, make my daughter feel better, but instead, I just end up sounding like I'm talking down to her.
Yeah. Anyway, so Lisa is not exactly comforted, but we then go to Homer, who is selling his sugar door to door, and his first stop is apparently the Skinners, which I guess they live nearby or something. Principal Skinner is actually persuaded at first to buy some sugar, but when his mother steps in, we don't actually hear her, he just reacts to her at this point. He is apparently grounded for talking to the sugar man, as he calls Homer.
And to be fair, Homer apparently has spends all day doing this, so Skinner could have been it doesn't really matter, like, he's in town, so Homer could have gone to, I think within a day you probably could have seen a sizable portion of Springfield.
Yeah, there aren't that many people, at least that we know of. I mean, there might be 1,000 people, so, and not to mention going door to door during the day, unless it's a Saturday, you're not gonna have any people home, so yeah. But anyway,
that's the thing, why isn't Skinner at work?
Well, like I said, maybe it's a Saturday or a weekend. I don't think it is, because...
No, but they bring up right when he...
That
comes.
Homer was supposed to be at work that day. That's why I don't understand.
Yeah,
maybe
whatever.
He's sick that day. It doesn't make sense.
Maybe it's like...
A Simpsons plot hole, for sure.
It's 3 o'clock, and Skinner you know, they got off work and he was fed up from the day. So he left as soon as the bell rung. You know, he didn't stick around.
I guess so.
I can explain it away.
I feel like Principal Skinner is the kind of person who would stay at the school until he is absolutely forced to leave, but maybe not. Maybe you're right. Maybe he likes to get the heck out of there.
It has just this day. I'm not saying every day. I'm saying this day.
But just that day, yeah.
Yeah.
He had to get home to draw his mother's face or whatever.
That's it. That's the silhouette night. That's why she's so upset, is because this is a special day where Skinner and her, Agnes, were supposed to hang out and like have a special, like, you know, a date night.
Yeah, we did it. We explained it away.
There you go. Hey guys, they are having a date night. That's why also she's so upset that he's taking time to talk to the Sugar Man.
Yeah. Anyway, after that digression, we then go back to school, where Allison has essentially replaced Lisa exactly as Lisa was afraid of. Ralph tries to cheat off Allison, and we learn that his cat's breath smells like cat food. No surprise. And even when Lisa tells Ralph that he can't cheat off her, he gets mad at her, because why would you bother cheating off the second smartest kid in the class? I mean,
of course, you
know.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And of course, everyone also bullies Allison, because once again, she's the smart one and she's probably also smaller being younger. So the mean girls knock her down into the mud. And Lisa is surprisingly wistful about this. I guess she misses being the target of the mean girls.
Well, I think that's like the depth of her sadness, like her malaise, is that even she even misses that, like even the fact that she was bullied, like that is not even,
well, because that was an acknowledgement of her specialness, essentially.
Yes, exactly. Like, yes, I was so intelligent that people felt threatened by it, and now the tables turned.
I like it. Once again, we're explaining it away. But Bart then shows up to basically console Lisa, because he doesn't want to see her miserable unless he did it, perhaps by putting a rubber spider down her dress. Bart, of course, Amelia has to put that note into his tape recorder, which I guess was a big thing around these times, is to make notes to yourself.
When did Home Alone come out?
You had the talk boy, didn't you?
I did have a talk boy.
I did as well.
It was a cool thing. You felt cool with it, even though it wasn't actually that cool, but felt cool when you're a little kid.
Yep.
So
you can record things and play them back at different speeds.
Well, woo! Matt, I hate to break to you, neither of us have gotten past recording ourselves and playing it back. Except now we have a little bit larger audience. We still have not progressed beyond, hey, isn't it cool to record ourselves talking about stuff?
At least we're talking about things that are far more important now than I was then.
I was probably also talking about this since when my talk boy. I don't remember precisely, but I mean, knowing me, I literally probably was talking about The Simpsons and comic books into my talk boy. Nothing has changed.
That sounds pretty awesome.
It has been 25 years, or whatever, and I'm still I've not aged.
The quality is a little better now, because you got a better microphone.
It sounds a little bit better, and I'm a little more informed, otherwise the same.
And your vocabulary is slightly larger.
And I really like Bart trying to console Lisa here, because it is, like, it's the... I think we brought this up before, but it's kind of the opposite of Bart's inner child, where his role was supplanted in that case by the whole town, and Lisa had to kind of like console him about it. And this is the opposite, kind of. And he's doing it in his own way, where he's like, hey, let's, you know, we can. What do you want me to do?
That's true. It's like Bart wants to help, but he's only good at a few special things, like getting Milhouse's picture on America's Most Wanted.
Yes, which is like a minor C plot, which is basically Milhouse is the fugitive.
It's so great.
Yeah, it really is. They should do an episode like this season or next season where it's just us seeing all this from Milhouse's perspective.
That would be so great.
I mean, I don't know why they haven't done that. Why they haven't done an episode where it's like, hey, let's take a classic episode and give a perspective of, like, from a minor character who you only see a couple times. Free ideas. Take them.
By the time we catch up to this show, we're going to have like 100 spec scripts for them.
I have 4, I think, right now. I think we have 4 in the works.
Good enough. But Bart is a slight amount of help. He offers to dig up some dirt on Allison, as he puts it. We don't see the culmination of this until later. We do see that Bart apparently has business cards.
I appreciate the offer, but it goes against every moral fiber in my body.
Suit yourself. You change your mind? Here's my card.
I don't need a card. You live in the room next to me.
Note, next year, order fewer cards.
Sorry, it's the idea of a 10-year-old having cards.
Well, I can empathize with that. You almost always order way more business cards, probably because they only are willing to print, you know, you must order 1,000 of them or none.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you want 100? It's $50. You want 1,000? It's $51.
I'm an idiot if I don't get the 1,000. It's the value, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But anyway, we then cut back to Homer in his somewhat insignificant B plot. We learn that he made, what was it, $40 for the day?
$40. Yes. Marge says that since he missed work, he missed making $40, which means Homer makes $5 an hour.
Well, it was the early 90s. That was pretty much minimum wage back then. So
I can see Burns. 1994 minimum wage. Let's see what that was. It was $4.25.
So, yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, especially if they're talking after taxes.
He works at a nuclear plant. You want to get minimum wage.
He only has a high school diploma. He doesn't have a college degree. He's a safety inspector and not an actual nuclear technician.
Safety inspectors get paid, not as well as a nuclear technician, but I'm sure. Okay, whatever. $40. Sure.
We're simp-splaining it away.
I don't know. It's $40 is not a lot of money.
It's really not.
This is before they kind of broke from Homer working at all. So I guess they were still making an attempt to explain it.
But Homer, of course, Marge releases the news that the plant called and said if he doesn't show up tomorrow, don't bother coming in on Monday, which Homer interprets as a 4-day weekend because, once again, Homer is dumb. We then go back to Lisa, who is commiserating in her room, and she is daydreaming about being the second best, because there's nothing wrong with being second best, apparently.
And now, Avis Renegar is proud to present the second best band in America. Will you welcome Garfunkel, Messina, Oakes, and Lisa singing their number two hit, Born to Runner Up?
Why would they come to our concert just to boo us?
That's a great question.
I really like that Lisa is even like, hey, that's not... No, that wouldn't make sense.
That dream doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, she's logical even to that point.
By this point, Bart shows up and basically reveals that his dirt digging has come up pretty much empty. She is clean as a whistle. So unfortunately for Lisa, there's nothing that can be done. So Lisa takes this as a sign that she needs to be friends with Allison rather than trying to compete with her. So the next day she tries to go over to Allison's house and, you know, do some fun things. And she meets Allison's father, Professor Taylor, as he refers to himself. Which, if you do that, no, stop being a jerk. It's one thing to ask your students to call you that, but to ask your kids' friends, no, that's.
I mean, I understand why they can't. How else are they going to fit that in? Like, he is only there for that one moment. So it's just another way that Allison is, you know, better than Lisa. Homer is an idiot. Allison's father is intelligentsia.
Well, yeah. But they once Professor Taylor hears how smart Lisa is, he decides to bring in on their anagram games.
Hi, Lisa. I'm Allison's father, Professor Taylor. I've heard great things about you.
Oh, really?
Oh, don't be modest. I'm glad we have someone who can join us in our anagram games.
We take proper names and rearrange the letters to form a description of that person.
Like, Alec Guinness.
Genuine class.
Oh, very good. All right, Lisa, Jeremy Irons.
Jeremy's iron.
Well, that's very good for a first try. You know what? I have a ball. Perhaps you'd like to bounce it.
Okay, maybe it's because I'm dumb, but that seems like a really tough one. The only thing I can think of was...
I can't... This, if you can think of any... If you can play this game at any level whatsoever, you are, like, so monstrously smarter than me that I can't even comprehend. Because I consider myself a fairly smart person. I don't even try to imagine trying to come up with... doing that on the spot. Like, I'd have to get out pen and paper and go like, okay, Alec, Guinness. All right, there's two G's. All right.
This is right. This is why we have computers do this for us now. That's why we have websites that do this.
So, I mean, I'm right there with Lisa in this case. I'm just like I completely empathize because that is insanity. Allison is, she is a 7-year-old girl who did that. Okay, that it's crazy.
No one is that smart unless they're making, you know, New York Times crossword puzzles or something. That's just,
she's just a very talented 7-year-old. She's a savant.
Apparently.
Yes.
But after this, Allison takes Lisa to show her trophy room, which is so bright that you practically need sunglasses for all her trophies. And then she shows Lisa her diorama for the school diorama competition, which we learn isn't for weeks, but Allison has already completed hers because it's dioramas. Who could wait? And really, if she wasn't a kid, I would smack her at that because, you know, making crafty things is just the worst.
Oh, that was the worst part of school for me. Oh, man. I want a diorama competition now that I'm an adult and I recognize the awesomeness of it.
Did you see the Simpsons diorama competition on Reddit?
I did not. I saw a picture from it. I did not see all of it. I need to look at it. But
I'll see if I can find it.
If I remember, I'll link it to our social media places. It's cool. She's doing the Telltale Heart, and that's like a great idea. Like, that's really smart.
That's true.
It's really cool. Like a little. That's another thing I'm gonna take umbrage with this episode, but we'll talk about that later.
Everyone's like, "Oh yeah, that." Well, we'll talk about it later. I guess you're right. Sorry about it. But at this point, Lisa is incredibly downtrodden, and well, we got to commercial essentially.
Yes. When we come back, Homer is standing guard over his pile of sugar that is in the backyard, which is a mound of sugar in your backyard is the perfect place to keep a mound of sugar. You know, out in the wild.
It wouldn't be sanitary or anything.
Yeah. He falls asleep at the wheel, is woken up by Marge, who is basically, she's run out of patience for Homer's sugar scheme. And this, I mean, it's about time. You know, it seems like it's been maybe, what, a week? Perhaps
maybe
a week at most. He is very defensive about not losing his sugar. And even at that point, he finds out that there is a British gentleman just hiding out in his sugar who was stealing it for his tea. And Homer uses that as case of point that he needs to guard his sugar. And then we get this impassioned speech about why he needs his sugar scheme.
Homer, when are you going to give up this crazy sugar scheme?
Never! Never, Marge! I can't live the button-down life like you. I want it all. The terrifying lows, the dizzying highs, the creamy middles. Sure, I might offend a few of the blue noses with my cocky stride and musky odors. Oh, I'll never be the darling of the so-called city fathers who cluck their tongues, stroke their beards, and talk about what's to be done with this Homer Simpson.
Look. Just get rid of the sugar, okay?
No! Hey! Get off my sugar! Bad beast! Bad! Ow! Ow! Oh, they're defending themselves somehow!
They're defending themselves somehow. Also, Matt, I'm going to point this out. The B plot literally becomes a B plot.
The B plot
becomes a B plot at this point in the show.
Oh, Simpsons puns!
It's so good. That whole speech was, I think they say it's pitched by George Meyer directly off the top of his head.
That's amazing. And that anyone could ever make that.
And David Silverman specifically asked to animate him himself because he liked Dan Castellaneta's performance so much. And it does. If you watch the animation in that speech, it is different than most of the rest of the episode. It fits the speech. You know, it is Homer being very dramatic, melodramatic even.
And pulling in random facts from nowhere.
Yes, of course. At the same time, Lisa is making her own diorama, which is Oliver Twist, and she makes 70, all cuts out and makes all 75 characters of Oliver Twist. I don't think I've ever read Oliver Twist.
Oliver Twist.
It's Dickens. It's about an orphan. Of course it is.
Yeah.
I think, I'm sure you'll correct me, guys, if I'm wrong. It's a Dickens novel. Like, I could guess 75% of them, and they have an orphan in them. She turns on a fan to, like, make it snowy, and honestly, it is a very impressive diorama. It is then blown out of the window by the fan, and Bart has to break the news that perhaps the diorama did not make it. It is best that at least they survived. They're both safe.
Oh my God.
At this point, Bart has done his research on Allison, and Lisa, who was hesitant before to, you know, use the dirt that Bart was going to dig up on her to kind of do anything nefarious, she has been broken down. She is tired of feeling... She's tired of feeling this way. She wants to get one over on Allison, even if it is doing something unethical. And so she agrees to join with Bart and his scheming ways. His first plan is just to use a hose on her.
Well, of course.
Lisa is... She's not convinced that maybe just getting Allison wet is not necessarily a good enough thing. I don't think it really will do much to her. And
Bart, well, I think Bart's response to that is perfect. Like, well, what if we get her diorama wet?
Well, that's true. And like, they eventually get to the point where yes, they will sabotage her diorama during the exhibit. And Lisa agrees. We cut to these two beekeepers. This is the weirdest, like, of all the B plot. They're the driest beekeepers in the world. And they talk about where their bees are, and they follow the trail in their bee mobile.
Weird.
This is just a Chevy. And they get to Homer's, to the Simpsons residence, and he has the sugar covered in bees, and they offered him thousands of dollars for their bees.
Which really, they could have just waited until it rained again. I mean, unless they're living near a desert, which, again, we don't know where Springfield is. Badlands.
There's a Badlands. There's a desert.
They're going to get them back eventually.
Just before Homer is going to accept the money, it rains and it melts the sugar. And we get a Wizard of Oz reference. I'm melting. And then we cut. That ends the B plot, literally and figuratively. We cut to Diorama-Rama, which is a terrific name for a diorama show.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Nelson has the Grapes of Wrath, and he just smashes grapes with a hammer. He loves Gallagher, like you do.
Basically, Nelson will love anybody whose job is destroying things, I'm pretty sure.
And being offensive. We see Uter's diorama.
Let's see. Our foreign exchange student, Uter, has chosen Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But this is just an empty box.
I begged you to look at mine first. I begged you.
I'm sorry. Every time.
Poor Uter. You know, he begged. He begged.
He did. They're jerks.
And then we see Bart and Lisa collude at this point. Bart creates a distraction by literally just running to the other side of the room and yelling about being a distraction. Lisa at that point swaps out we don't know. We see a shrouded a box. We don't know what's in it. And it replaces that with Allison's diorama, which he hides underneath in a compartment underneath the floor, which
ironic.
Yeah. And it is revealed to be in a cow's heart.
Allison, is this supposed to be some kind of joke?
I didn't do that. I mean a different one.
Oh, is that so, young lady? Well, where is this phantom diorama?
I don't know.
At least have the guts to take the blame, girl. You're only compounding your folly by lying about it.
Right on.
Young lady, cow hearts belong in a butcher's window, not the classroom. Well, maybe in an older student's biology classroom, but that's none of my business. Elementary school is where I wound up, and it's too late to do anything about that. Frankly, I'm starting to regret skipping you ahead.
It's the beating of that hideous heart!
I mean, I think I hear something.
The sound design work on that clip is just fantastic. The echoing, the thumping, it's just, oh.
It's really good. And the framing of the shot, it's a really clever use of the Telltale Heart as like, hey, let's make the diorama about the Telltale Heart, and then Lisa herself becomes the protagonist in a certain way, and it's
so meta, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple but so well executed. It's so good, and it really represents Lisa's guilt and Lisa kind of realizing, you know, what she learns and all that. But Skinner sees Allison's diorama, not impressed, which...
Yeah, seriously, Skinner, you're screwed up, because that's still a cool diorama today.
I take.
I want to build that diorama. I want to figure out how to do that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, like a metronome, the beating of a heart. That's cool. Then we see Lisa's diorama, which we don't see. Yeah, theoretically, it's not Oliver Twist. But it ends up Ralph. Diorama wins, famously, which is just a box full of packaged Star Wars figures.
Well, yeah, because Star Wars is awesome, and it's lunchtime.
Yes, Allison's did deserve to win, but I completely buy that teachers go, oh, well, I'm hungry. Let's just get this over with. After the show's over, Lisa and Allison are, you know, they walk down the street, down the sidewalk, and Lisa apologizes. I guess it's assumed that she's the perpetrator of all this. Allison is very nice about all that. I myself would maybe be a bit upset if someone did that to me.
I'd be like, all right, get the heck out.
I mean, but she,
that's the nice phrasing.
She's very, she accepts Lisa's apology, and they promise to be best friends. And then Ralph strolls by.
I beat the smart kids. I beat the smart kids. Oh, I bent my Wookiees.
Hey, Ralph, want to come with me and Allison to play anagrams?
We take proper names and rearrange the letters to form a description of that person.
My cat's breath smells like cat food.
And that's how the episode ends.
And we never see Allison again.
That's the thing. I'm like, oh, yes, they'd be best friends. And then Allison vanishes. Yep. But this is a really good episode, Matt.
It is quite a good episode. It's funny because we talk about this all the time, especially lately for some reason, about the importance of the B plot. And this one is completely out of left field, has no bearing on the A plot, but it gets some good gags in there. So it's not great, but I don't think it detracts too much. I mean, they're just using it to stretch the episode, and that's fine.
I love the B plot. I don't know what you're talking about. B plot.
Is it because it's a B plot?
Well, that doesn't hurt. But, I mean, it is not connected to the A plot whatsoever, but
like not even in the littlest bit, not even the most tenuous connection.
No, it is not. But I don't know. It is still it's hilarious. Like everything about it is funny, and it has a beginning, middle, and end. You know, it itself tells a story. It is not like mind blowing kind of story. It is literally Homer finds sugar. Homer fails at selling sugar. Homer loses sugar. But you know, it has a bunch of jokes in there. It you know, it goes from A to B to C. It is an actual B plot. It actually has a story.
It really does. And I think that's one of the things we really look for in a B plot is whether it's connected or not. Does it make sense? Are the jokes actually funny? Really, that's it. Those are the only two things that really make sense.
An A plot that is more serious than funny, even though it does have plenty of its own laughs, mostly from Bart and Ralph's contribution. Lisa's sadness or malaise or anger is funny to an extent, but the burden of humor is usually is laid on kind of supporting characters and stuff like that.
It kind of seems like whenever there's a Lisa episode, that's how it ends up, is the Lisa subplot is not really super funny, so all of the subplots in Lisa-based episodes are about Homer being goofy or Bart being something crazy.
Yeah, but I think this episode's really good, and we will rank it at the end of the show. Not sure where to put it. We'll have to hash it out. I have an idea. On to our next segment. It is time for my favorite episode. And we have a submission this week.
Whoa. Not surprised. This is a good episode. Oh, no. Did you close it?
No.
Oh.
Yes, we have a submission from Amy. Hi, Matt and Robbie. I love your show. I look forward to it every week very much. There are so many amazing episodes of Simpsons. I have to say all my all-time favorite is coming up, so I want to make sure I submitted for it. My favorite episode is Season 6, Episode 2, Lisa's Rival. It's a great Lisa episode. I love how Lisa actually misses being the nerd in her class once Allison comes and how threatened she is. We don't often get to see Lisa really have to put in effort to be the smartest person in the room. I love when Lisa goes to Allison's house and her family is really smart and play anagram, so by Lisa giving a lame answer and Allison's dad handing her a ball. The look on Lisa's face is priceless. I love seeing Lisa get competitive and go a little crazy. Ending with Diorama-rama, just hearing Mr. Skinner say it makes me laugh every time, and its little spin on the Telltale Heart is brilliant. Story has a lot of heart to it. Lisa learns to relax and accept Allison is just as good, if not better, at academics as she is. Plus, there are a lot of great lines, including the classic Ralph Wiggum quote, "I bet." This is just one of many great episodes of The Simpsons. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Amy. Your submission is appreciated. If you guys have a My Favorite Episode submission, just send it to us at simpsonshowpod@gmail.com. Explain why a certain episode is your favorite, and I'll read it on air. Our next segment is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group. Roughly around the time the episode debuted, week or two, give or take, and see what people were talking about, what they thought about the episode, if there's other things happening, Simpsons related or not, and see how they affect the things. I would think I'd become a nerd reading these things every week about how people are so upset with the quality of the show, but this week in particular was largely negative, and it actually angered me a little bit. I'm gonna read a couple choice comments. And these are, in this case, it was the majority. A lot of the times I read these, but they're weighed off by people saying, no, I love this one. It was great. And there were a few comments like that saying they liked a particular gag or that joke was hilarious. But these, I don't know if the message was just overwhelmed by them that in this particular week or not, but here we go. This episode was a throwaway from season 5. The last two Sundays, my wife and I sat down to watch The Simpsons like we usually do. This new season is really getting me scared. It seems to me that the characters have been replaced by pod people. They are still going through the motions, I'm guessing, but some critical element is gone. The jokes they are telling could be from Bosom Buddies or any of a million other sitcoms. Homer steals a pile of sugar. Where Bosom Buddies did not have sugar bee plots.
No anagram games in other sitcoms. I mean, no Telltale Heart. I've never seen a Telltale Heart analogy. I've never seen anyone even mention Edgar Allan Poe in other shows. Come on.
And then this is the worst. There's hardly any reason to justify it. The show has been officially destroyed. Every character has been destroyed. The scripts should be destroyed. What? I want to reach back in time and punch this guy in the face.
These are neckbeards from the early internet who hate anything that is about a female. I'm pretty sure that's what it comes down to.
I'm not going to try and guess who this guy is, but I find him distasteful. Okay, this episode, I don't know why so much hate for this episode. It's funny. It has a lot of character. It's very solid. Don't understand.
I can't understand what they would have hated about this.
Every character has been destroyed? What? How is this not, like, this is a good Lisa episode. It personifies her character. This is her trying to deal with confidence of not being the smartest person. I don't understand what's not. This whole episode is character driven. I don't know if these people understand. Okay, calm down. It's okay. Gotta get that out there. Made me a little upset.
Just a little bit.
A little upset. Okay. We'll see. A lot of people.
Just breathe.
Lot of people saying that like because this was produced during the season 5 run, that's the reason. The season 5 was bad, which, no, not bad. Good. Great. Even. I don't know.
Didn't have our perspective, I guess. They're also stupid.
Hindsight is 2020, but I mean, I don't watch any current shows and go like, I don't know. Okay. Next, let's move on. Move on. Move on. Get past this.
Move on.
Move on. Next segment is time for our listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow.
KBBL is gonna give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog. We have a wiener.
Yellow.
Our listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite summer-related moment or episode? And answers, much like I expected, but tons of them. Really appreciate it, you guys. Keep up the good work. First, we have Matt at MattPat11. Summer of 442 is one of my all-time favorite episodes, and the conclusion may be the best Bart-Lisa moment ever. We have Rushian at Rusaleve13. Homer coming back to Flanders' summer house to find his car covered in seashells. Sweet, merciful crap! Isaac at Isaac is good. And Lisa Sachs, well, sir, I hate to be suspicious Aloysius on you, but did you steal my air conditioner? Lauren at Italia Princess, the summer 4 for 2, so many good moments like Oh Sweet Merciful Crap, My Car, and Hey, He Looks Just Like You, Poindexter. And Daryl at Tucker Chicken 18, his answer, short and sweet, like, you know, whatever. Uh-oh, Matt's dying. We have Rob's answer, Love Camp Krusty, quote, gentleman to evil. Kate, in a similar answer, Dear Mom and Dad, I no longer fear hell because I've been to Camp Krusty. Amy's answer, Summer 4-2 is an awesome episode. I love when Lisa tries to lose her smart girl image, walks by a library where Alice from Alice in Wonderland invites her to a tea party and then says, don't, Lisa, it's a trick, because the white rabbit has a gun to her head. And that cartoon from the New Yorker says, we have periodicals on microfiche. Yeah. Brian, not going to hog all of Summer 4-2, so I'll narrow it down to a scene from it. Homer buys a bottle of whiskey, a porno magazine, a box of condoms, panty shields, and an enema. Marge seeing this tells him, I don't know what you've got planned for tonight, but count me out. Which, yes. Rhiannon's answer, Summer 4-2, and Milhouse's love for sprinklers. It's the last day of school, Milhouse. Try to share some dignity. And finally, Cameron's answer, Bart of Darkness, easily the best summer-related episode, but this is my favorite moment. Hey, Bart, your epidermis is showing. As we highlighted last week, spectacular. Matt, what is your answer?
See, I feel kind of bad. Like, The Simpsons run from usually September or October through the following April or May, so I feel like there really aren't that many actual summer-based episodes. There are lots of episodes that could take place in the summer, but I really got to give it to Summer of 4-2. It is a crowning achievement of Simpsons, involving both Bart and Lisa and the family and side characters, and just everything about that episode is amazing. It is probably in my top 10 of all time.
Pick a moment, man. I want you to pick a moment from that episode.
I will pick when they are on the porch playing the dating game and Milhouse gets the what's he called him?
The Poindexter,
yes. That is just absolutely perfect. That is what we do when we go on vacation somewhere in the summertime. We don't go out. We sit there playing board games.
My answer is also from Summer 4-2.
Shocking.
No surprise there. But I'm going to pick, no one even mentioned this moment, which is probably, I don't know about my favorite Lisa moment, but it is certainly up there. It is the moment where she and Bart are at, I believe, the breakfast table. And Marge is there cooking them breakfast, and then she walks away for a moment, and they're at that exact moment Marge is out of sight. Lisa like unleashes her anger at Bart for him basically sabotaging her popularity, and like grabs him, and at the same time has her hand wrapped around the little bear honey thing and is squeezing, like, as she's holding onto him, and like just like hardly, I don't think there's ever a moment in the entire show where you see Lisa as I is that. And
yeah,
it's so unique. And like the visual imagery of her squeezing the honey out of that bear. And then as soon as Marge's back, just bears back at the table, she's like, oh, Bart, everything's normal. Like, it's just so like, it does a perfect job of representing that kind of boiling anger that she has inside, but that she very rarely lets show. Like, it's like so much to it. And I love it. And it's great. Like, it is top 10 for me as well. Summer 4-2 is amazing.
So far away.
It's not that bad. It's not that far away. A couple seasons now. Within,
it's like a year. It's a long time.
It's not. We're like 9 months away. 8 months away. It's not that bad. Do the math.
Fair enough.
Next week's question. What is your favorite Ralph Wiggum quote?
Oh, that's going to be a rough one. I'm going to have to do some serious sifting.
I'll put this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, on Twitter at SimpsonsShowPod. You can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. I'll post questions there. I post links there. I post stuff. You can go to our, if you go to those places, you can see the video of me drinking the milkshake. It was something. And speaking of the milkshake, it is time once again for our new Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each challenge each other with 3 trivia questions. 1 easy, 1 medium, 1 hard. See who can stump the other. Season 5, we had a wager. I lost it. We made a milkshake and I drank it. It was bad. Like I said, the video up on our YouTube page. You can find it on our Facebook or our Twitter. This season we have a wager. Whoever, the host who does not win has to mow their yard wearing their wife's Sunday best.
So what happens if the person in question doesn't have a lawn at that point?
We'll have to figure it out. We'll improvise. We'll figure out a solution.
Fair enough.
If we get to that point, we have a theme this week. I believe it was suggested by Sean. Yep, ShawnyMac15 on Twitter. His suggestion is Simpsons aliases for a theme. I like it. Matt, give me my easy question.
All right, your easy question, and it's pretty easy. What is Bart's graffiti handle?
El Barto.
Yeah, that is correct, sir.
Your easy question. What is the last name the Simpsons are given in Cape Fear? The new last name.
You keep doing this to me. I believe it is the Thompsons.
Okay. My medium question, Matt?
All right. Your medium question is a little tougher.
Okay.
All right. What new name did Homer get from a hairdryer?
Max Power.
That is correct, sir.
Your medium question, Matt. In Homer to the Max, where does Homer get the name Max Power?
From a hairdryer.
You are correct.
I swear to God, if our hard questions are the same, I'm going to die.
Give me a hard question. Here we go.
All right. Name all of Homer's aliases for writing bad checks at the Quickie Mart.
Homer J. Simpson, Homer S. Simpson, okay. H.J. Simpson, Homer Simpson, that's with an O, and Homer J. Fong.
Was that your question too?
Matt, your hard question. In Homer and Apu, name all five variations of Homer's name that Apu does not accept checks from.
I believe it's Homer J. Simpson, Homer S. Simpson, H.J. Simpson, Homer Simpson, and Homer J. Fong.
Hey, you're correct. Hey.
Oh my God. I know we can come up with some better ones off the top of our heads. Come on.
This is how it plays out, Matt. This is how it plays out, all right?
I can't believe that.
We both got, we pad our stats a little bit. Made ourselves look good. I have a bonus question from Sean. It's with the theme. What are the other three names Homer suggests to Judge Snyder aside from Max Power?
At least the ones
he lists. I don't know. There probably are others.
Hercules Rockefeller.
That's one of them. Two more.
Okay. Rembrandt Q. Einstein.
That's two. One more.
I have no idea what the other one is.
The third is Handsome Be Wonderful.
Handsome Be Wonderful. Of course.
Good name. We are running long tonight, so I'm not gonna cut the trivia there. But keep sending in themes. Keep sending in trivia. I will use them at some point. We just like to blab too much, I guess. It is time for our final segment. It is time, once again, for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where Matt and I rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Okay, Matt. I Love Lisa is number 18. I submit this episode is better than I Love Lisa.
Yeah, I pretty much have to agree with you there. I mean, you get the Ralph, which is funny, but this episode really goes to the core of what Lisa is. It's less so something being foisted upon Lisa as forcing her to react to something, which is not always the best way to show what a character is, but in this case, it works really, really well. And really, that's kind of, with the exception of Lisa's Substitute, that's our highest Lisa episode, so this is going to be a tough one.
I would put it above Krusty Gets Cancelled.
I was looking there as well. I was trying to think, is it better than Homer the Heretic? And I don't think it quite is, because Homer the Heretic is Homer to a T. This episode is Lisa, but you also get a little bit of Homer in there. Homer the Heretic is just straight up Homer, and I think that works pretty well. And plus, there are a few times that in this episode that things aren't quite as tight as Homer the Heretic.
You mean Homer the Heretic?
Yes, Homer the Heretic, my bad.
But I agree. I think that's a good spot for Lisa's rival. Right below Homer the Heretic, right above Krusty Gets Canceled, new number 13. Still, number one is Cape Fear. Last place, 104th, Homer's Odyssey. It will be supplanted. For sure.
I guarantee it.
For sure. You can find this list at our website, simply thesimpsonsshow.com. Everything there. New episodes. This list broken down by season. I believe we're going to break out our Trials of Horror list as well when we get to this season's Trials of Horror. And links to our Facebook, our Twitter, our RSS feed, our Patreon, if you want to help us out, really appreciate it. What is our next episode, Matt? We are not doing the clip show.
Oh, not doing a clip show, but clip shows are the best. Everyone loves clip shows.
We're not doing clip shows.
Fine. It is Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Itchy and Scratchy Land. Mm-hmm. Again, like so many great episodes all in a row. It's staggering, but another great one. Can't wait to talk about it. Let's see. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Please check out my comic book podcast, Handsome Boys Comics Hour, handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Matt does not participate in social media. Unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer, you will not find him.
That's true. However, I have decided that I will seek the empty Supreme Court justice slot. So I will be spending the next several months attempting to blackmail or bribe Republican Congress people. So if you want to talk to me, your best bet is to get me some dirt on them. So just send it into the show and we'll see what we can do.
I'm actually completely for that. Sounds great. So if you, I'm not going to say that for certain you guys have dirt, but if you do, I'm not against seeing it. Be interested in at least.
Mm-hmm.
We use it only for good, I promise.
We absolutely will.
With that, I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching those episodes.
Shh.